Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest and I felt outraged.
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Focus, Friel, focus. This is Wretched Radio. Well, well played, Joey. A brand new opening. Painfully funny, isn't it? So many preachers who are downright unqualified, which is why James chapter 3, you talk about providence. Just heard a sermon about this on Sunday when we went to church, because, well, that's when we go to church. James chapter 3 and verses 1 and 2, not many of you should seek that office of teacher. Now, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have people who desire to become pastors and teachers in the church. You just better think it through long and hard, and I suspect one of the reasons that admonition was given was considering the context. If you recall the book of James, it's sometimes called the Proverbs of the New Testament because it feels kind of pew, 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 pew. There's a line here, there's a line there, and it's just kind of a bunch of wise thoughts, but they don't seem to flow very well. Well, because we've been making our way through the book of James in our church, we're expository, you know. By the way, speaking of expository sermons, there is a new Pew report or a Gallup poll, I can't remember which one because I simply read it on Challey's site, that the latest trend in churches, can you guess what it is? It's not music. It isn't whoop-de-doo.
Carpet color.
It's glory, glitter, and chicken feathers, which actually might be one of the biggest trends in some buildings where they put the name church on them. It's preaching. It's expository preaching. Apparently, it's all the rage these days, which is fascinating because I just read an article, I think in some relevant magazine or something, and it was some youngster. Let me see if I can find it for you. It's some youngster, a whippersnapper, telling old people how they need to do church. And one of the things you need to get rid of was, oh, wait, I got it down here. Oh,
all right.
I was saving this for Phil Johnson. Well, too bad, Phil. By the way, you can listen to Phil on Too Wretched for Radio. Every Monday here, we post a new one with Phil. They're always super fine. This is from Crosswalk. Yeah. It should be called Hodgepodge is what it should be called. On occasion, like a blind squirrel that finds the correct time in the shed twice a day, the number 10 activity that needs to go is the sermon. I got Viltafish Larry. The sermon needs to go. Quote, think about it. When was the last time you experienced a long-lasting life change as the result of someone talking at you? Probably a while ago. This is the type of empirical research that evolutionists use. Not a single citation. With attention spans barely long enough to read a tweet, how much of your current sermon is actually sinking in? Answer, a lot. And we usually get about a 50-minute blast every week. I mean, even colleges are moving away from lecture-based teaching. So why not churches? Well, let me think of some biblical reasons. Oh, yeah. Because the pastor is constantly told to preach, teach, rebuke, instruct, encourage. That's his primary job. And that's the primary way that the Bible chooses to communicate. And that's the way that Jesus did it. If you recall on the road to Emmaus, what did he do? He preached about himself from a movie clip? No, from the Bible. You can still have, this is from this dopey article, you can still have your pastor up front Sundays, but instead of just talking, he or she can lead experiences. Lectures could be replaced by an environment where people are free to talk and ask questions. Terrific! Let's just all throw our confusion into a great big pile. We'll call it a Sunday get-together. Sunday brunch. We'll serve some sort of egg bake, quiche sort of affair. And then we'll all talk about what we don't understand, and then we'll leave feeling much better. You could even try sitting people at tables to better encourage discussions. These are the types of moments that create the biggest impact. First of all, abiblical. This does not help We need people who, this just isn't that hard. Somebody who's learned more, who has studied harder, who's prepared to teach something, delivers, and we sit and listen. If nobody's studying, everybody's talking about their mixed experiences, then what you've got there is something Brian McLaren would endorse. Apparently, by the way, he's still on the stump. Somebody sent me an email. Yeah, Brian, he's still collecting
a
paycheck.
Haven't really heard from him in a while.
The movement didn't really happen. So apparently Phyllis Tickle was wrong. I believe she said that Brian McLaren is the Martin Luther of our age. Even if you're not Lutheran, that's kind of got to go down a little bit tough on you. Carl Truman was talking about Phyllis Tickle's prediction, that, or at least statement, that Brian McLaren, the emergent guru, was akin to Martin Luther for his reformation of the church. The hyperbole. We expect that type of salesmanship from, you know, an infomercial, the Shark Tank, but not from Christians, which is why these hyperbolic statements, these overblown resumes that are delivered, this is the most important movie that we've ever had. This book, we haven't seen anything this important since Augustine. Really? And then what do you know? The next week, there's something that knocks it off of the charts, the hyperbole in evangelical Christianity. Phyllis Tickle calling Brian McLaren Martin Luther. Tony, I'm amazed you haven't said anything yet as the in-house Lutheran.
Pretty much still way back at the McLaren thing.
Get way up your nose.
Brain kind of froze.
Somebody teaches, the rest of us listen. Having said that, you got to be careful how quick you are to pursue that. There are a lot of people who maybe feel like they should be in preaching or teaching ministry. Got to be careful because there's an internal and there's an external call. That's typically the way the church has seen it. It is correct. It says that it is a good, what did Paul say to Timothy? It's good that somebody desires, that seeks this office. They feel like they should be a preacher. Well, that's good. It should be an internal desire to be a preacher. But it shouldn't be all alone an internal affair. It should be externally revealed whether or not you have, say, the qualifications. In other words, your local church needs to help you in the process. Somebody outside of you needs to say, you know what? We've been studying you. We see the same thing. Or, you know what? We understand you want to be a preacher, but this is what we've seen, and we don't think it's a good idea. If you don't have both of those things, then you don't have an official calling. Here's what James wrote. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. Do you teach Sunday school? Are you teaching religion to your children? This qualifies to all of us. Scary business. Verse 2. For we all stumble in many ways, all of us. And by the way, it's a stumbling. It doesn't seem to be an intentionally motivated, ill will sort of bad teaching. You just say things that are dumb. Things come flying out of your mouth wrong. I know it happens with me. Sometimes I'll listen to a program and it's like, what word did I just use? That was the opposite of the word that I was thinking about. We all stumble. So you got to be careful because you're going to be judged for that. Why did James include it at this point? And by the way, he goes on to give the tongue, the tongue metaphor. You got to control your tongue, the horse, the bridle, the ship, the rudder. And you think, okay, he moved from being a teacher to the tongue. No, it goes all the way through verse 8 and it kind of concludes there. But no man can tame the tongue because it's unruly and full of deadly poison. So the reason that that's included there is because it's included, the tongue and the teacher go together. You've got to be careful if you want to be a teacher because your tongue is very untamable. Why did he put those two admonitions together? Because the preaching and teaching ministry is the primary ministry of the church, specifically of the pastor. Why does James include it there? Chapter 3, verse 1. Well, it's probably because of James chapter 2, give or take about halfway through the chapter. He's talking about the law-gospel distinction. You got to know the difference, that faith alone is never, you're saved by faith alone, but faith is never alone. Understanding that we are saved by grace alone, but that produces works. The works do not produce grace. Grace produces works. And it's something that people clearly biff all the time. Consider the Roman Catholic Church. They're flat out, they've misused, they've mishandled the word of God. And so James' admonition is, don't let many of you become teachers, because it's pretty easy to goof it, especially with the law-gospel distinction. Speaking of Brian McLaren, I mean Martin Luther. Martin Luther labored long and hard. Sorry, I just...
Still just freezes my brain.
Came out just like that.
Ever do that again, please.
Consider the Phyllis Tickle source.
There is that.
There's an admit that Martin Luther wrangled with this to make sure that we understand it. In fact, he said that this is the hinge on which the church swings. If you do not understand, there were a couple of hinges for Martin. Justification, certainly one, but the law-gospel distinction, another. The whole of the church, the whole of our understanding of the Bible hinges on our understanding of the law and the gospel, that the law is a schoolmaster. It leads us to Jesus. It drives us like a whip to Calvary, but no further. We're not under the law, but that doesn't mean we don't produce works in keeping with the law, but not to say, but because we've been saved. All that to say, too many men these days are, and women, are unqualified. And there is a reason that James wrote chapter 3 and verses 1 and 2 to them. Focus, Friel. That's not what we were going to talk about. Focus. Focus. This, see what you did, Joey, with the new open, is Wretched Radio.
Thanks much for being here. Glad you would spend part of your day listening to Wretched Radio. It's that time of year, isn't it? Thanksgiving leads us to Black Friday, which leads us on a downhill slide to a brand new year, with barely a chance to catch your breath. So when you do come up for air for just a moment, would you prayerfully consider partnering with us as a Wretched Gospel partner? Join with us to preach the gospel, equip others to preach and defend the gospel, and to strengthen the local church. Wretched.org/donate has details on how you can give your tax-deductible gift to Wretched. Whether you give a one-time gift or become a Wretched monthly gospel partner, Wretched.org/donate will let you do that. Wretched TV and radio reaches millions of people around the world every year with the gospel, and we believe we can reach even more with your help as a Wretched gospel partner. Wretched.org/donate. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Well, Geneva was married, but in her 20s, she had a one-year-old daughter at home that would interfere with her plans to go back to school, and so she was hoping she wasn't pregnant, but she was. Asked her how she felt about her pregnancy. She says, I don't want it, and my husband doesn't want it. She agreed to do an ultrasound, and she didn't want to take any pictures of the ultrasound, but she did look at it for a long time. And so we put it in the file, and then we started walking out of the clinic with her, and she turns to the nurse, and she says, do you have any referrals for medical providers? And I said, yeah, we've got a good doctor. You can go see him. Well, she went to him and she chose life.
Ultrasounds save lives. Would you please consider supporting preborn.org, providing free ultrasounds and presenting the gospel to moms and dads, $28 per ultrasound. How many could you support each month? Please support Preborn at preborn.org/wretched.
Here at Wretched, we know you guys are already great at giving away Don't Stub Your Toe and What Time Is Purple. So, why not add Are You a Rotten Fish to your arsenal? Are You a Rotten Fish is a perfect booklet for anyone looking to truly understand what makes a false convert. Are You a Rotten Fish is a detailed treatment of true and false conversions. You know, the difference between wise and foolish virgins, wheat and tares, the difference between good and rotten fish. Give it away to college students as they head off to school or to your youth group at church. Go to wretched.org/fish and get your copies now. Are You a Rotten Fish compares and contrasts the true gospel versus the false gospel in a short, thorough, punchy, yet loving way. Get your copies of Are You a Rotten Fish at wretched.org/fish. wretched.org/fish. SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Books of the Bible. 1 and 2 Kings relate the history of Israel from Solomon through the division of Israel into two kingdoms to the destruction of both kingdoms. Though Israel and Judah and their kings were often unfaithful, God continually calls his people to repentance through his prophets. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
In four parts, just straightforward, no flourishes, no fancy business, no messing around with a bass line. Thank you very much.
Where are the four parts?
In this?
Yeah, that's unison.
The organ.
That's not what
listen
people
to the
usually,
organ.
I'm listening. That's not what people usually talk about when they talk about four parts.
It's the or I was talking about no flourishes, no frills, just play it so those of us who are barely hanging on for the ride can find the line and occasionally hit one of the notes. I appreciate your skills. I do, that you can do stuff all over the place, but for those of us who are just trying to find our part, if you could just stick with it, we'd be really, really grateful. This is Wretched Radio. When was the last time you got to hear a big old pipe organ like that? I'm telling you. Magnificent. I know, not everybody loves it. Let's get to church news. In fact, speaking of worshiping, you think we planned this program? No, Todd, actually, we don't think that you do at all. Four reasons that you should sing even when you don't feel like singing. This would be from The Cripple Gate. Number one, you're commanded to. Well, that's pretty straightforward. I think it's somewhere in Proverbs. We're supposed to sing a song, sing out loud and to sing out strong. Sing of good things, not bad. Sing of happy, not sad.
Sad.
Sing of happy, not sad. It's
got to
be glad.
Now.
Sing for me, not glad. Okay, hold on. No, I'm determined at this moment to just see how much of this song that I actually remember. Sing a song, sing it strong. Yeah, but there's another verse to this
that I can't.
Another verse to this. Sing for you and for me. Sing for things that will be. Sing of oceans and tree. Okay, I'm making it up now. But the point is, I memorized more than I really thought that I had because music is didactic. That's right. That would be point number four. It's theological training. Memorize songs, at least that have theology, and you're going to memorize stuff about God. You remember music long after you forget teaching, don't you? That doesn't mean that it has preeminence. It just means that you remember. Even people, how many times have we heard stories of people with Alzheimer's? If you start to play a hymn in music, it's like it comes back. It gets in there so deep. By the way, when are they going to find a cure for that disease? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be a blessing from God? That's an awful one. Number three, it is soul lifting. Remember what Saul would have David do? Play. It just brings you up. Try it. I'm telling you, you're going through a rough time. You start singing. It's really tough to be in the dumps. And finally, number four, it is evangelistic. You say, what? Remember Paul and Silas singing in the jail? What happened? People heard it. They heard about Jesus, and they responded. It causes unbelievers to want what they are obviously lacking. So please, do what it says in Ecclesiastes and sing. Sing a song.
Sing a song.
Sing for you and for me. Joey, what's the second verse on this? Would you look that up? I think that was a Carpenter song, wasn't it? Did anybody do a remake on that?
No.
I think it's about time. It was the Carpenters.
It's about space. It's about two men in the street.
10 things baseball can teach you about ministry. I don't know if you knew that, but there's a new book out that teaches you how to look at the champions of the baseball world to see the important lessons they have for ministry leaders. Did you know that?
He looks
for the champions of the baseball world to see the important lessons they have for ministry leaders. Okay, here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know that?
Well,
no, I get that. But it's like, okay, you look at a baseball coach and you go, he's successful. Therefore, apply that to ministry. Well, how do you know that that's right? How do you know what applies to baseball applies to ministry? How do you know if anything is right? You have to use the Bible. Therefore, our teaching manual is the Bible. Baseball stories, I guess if you want to bring them in as an analogy to support a biblical truth, but we go from the greater to the lesser, not the lesser to the greater. All right, Joey, what's the second verse? Just give me a line of it.
Sing a song, make it simple to last your whole life long.
Your whole life long. Okay, give me the next part.
Don't worry that.
Worry if it's not good or bad, whatever your gifts may be. Is that it?
No, not even close. Don't worry that it's not good enough for anyone else to hear.
Anyone else to see. Oh, hear. Whatever. Just sing a song.
Yes.
Okay. What year was that song cranked? 1974?
1478.
73.
73. And there it is.
Yep.
Over Earth. 4 decades later? Is that possible? Just stuck. Right there. We don't need to study baseball to learn how to do ministry. In fact, baseball coaches should be studying the Bible to learn how to be a better coach. What? The Bible's not a baseball instruction manual? No, it's not. But it is a leadership manual, is it not? It teaches you how to be a leader. It teaches you truths about how to instruct people, doesn't it? We don't need to learn from baseball, silly rabbit. 4 reasons your church should be getting into biblical counseling, specifically why you should be pursuing certification this year. That's right, certification this year. Number one, we're surrounded by brokenness. Association of Certified Biblical Counselors will help you to counsel broken people. Do you know any? Everybody, and increasingly so in our culture. The benefits of Christianity being pervasive in a society, sometimes we'll gloss over these things. But when you've got a culture that is increasingly controlled by secular humanism, people are broken and hurting, and it's revealed more. This is not about they've got a God-shaped hole in their heart that only Jesus can fill. Far from it. But do they not have broken hearts? Are they not hurting? No. We need to orient that to help them understand why, which is the goal of the biblical counselor. Not always an easy job because it entails sin. It entails looking at yourself, getting downwind from yourself. That's no easy assignment. But it's biblical. At least that's what Yogi Berra said. No, wait, that's not right. That's not where I want to get my information. The Bible can help people see why it is that everything is lousy, and point them to Jesus, the one who forgives their sins and reorients their thinking. We're surrounded by brokenness, and I think increasingly so. And that is why I still think that biblical counseling inside of a church is one of the best ways to reach out to a community. Start putting out a shingle. Advertise. Hurting? We can help you biblically. Spoke to John Crotts, Pastor John Crotts, wrote a very good book, we need it these days, on Christian graciousness. In other words, that we're supposed to be gracious even in the heat of a battle. Remember, the wisdom, heavenly wisdom, we're peaceable people. When we're getting into fights with people, your worldview is that my worldview, this is, and I'm that. That's earthly and demonic. If your conversations always end up in conflict with believers and unbelievers, you're doing something wrong. Yes, the Christian gospel is a stumbling block, but we should not be. So John was talking about at his church how biblical counseling is just blowing up their church. And I don't mean in an Islamic way. I mean in a good way. It is just people are coming because they're getting counseled. They're getting saved. Then they get plugged into the church. And then they counsel other people. You know, the way that Christianity is supposed to work. Number two, you need the information as much as your counselees do. John Street, who heads up the biblical counseling program at Masters University, which you should check out at masters.edu. He tweeted something like this recently. This is going to hurt. If all seminarians were studying not merely for the sake of knowledge, but primarily for the sake of godliness, we'd have far fewer scandals from the pulpit. I got to tell you something. That should yank all of us up very short. Don't study theology just to learn more stuff. Study theology so that you can love Jesus more, so that you can become more holy. That's the point. And when you do biblical counseling, that's what it's going to do. If you can't be ahead of your counselee, you're in the wrong game. You should be applying this stuff to yourself, which is one more reason to get certified at Association of Certified Biblical Counselors or to take the master's program at masters.edu. We're ministers of the word, not ministers of the world. We should be helping people. You're a counselor, by the way. Hey, what did you think about? Hey, do you think I should? You're a counselor. Are you going to do it in a worldly way or in a biblical way? Number four, do you counsel every day, so do it well. Know your Bible better so that you can bring more scripture to bear rather than, well, I think that you could kind of sort of maybe. We're all called to counsel one another. Perhaps this is the year for you to get certified. This is Wretched Radio in four parts.
Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
Know your church fathers. Basil of Caesarea was bishop of Caesarea in the 4th century. He was a defender of orthodoxy and wrote several important works proving the divinity of the Holy Spirit and refuting the Arian heresy. Most importantly, he introduced the Trinitarian formula, describing God as one being and three persons. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
All right, Joey, here are your four parts. This is Wretched Radio. You know what hymn was stuck in my head? Just this morning, matter of fact. With the Lord begin thy task, Jesus will... Couldn't remember it. With the Lord begin thy task, I'll get back to you on that one. This is Wretched Radio. Let me look that one up for you because
with
it
the
was
Lord
a
begin
good
your
one.
Task, Jesus will direct it. For his aid and counsel ask, Jesus will perfect it. Every morn with Jesus ride, and when the day,
and
is,
when
ended,
day is ended.
In his name, then close your eyes to be to him
be
commended.
To him commended. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's good theology in there, isn't it? I think it's been rewritten these days. Speak the word, and God will do it because he has some Old Testament verses taken out of context that say so. I think that's kind of how it goes. That's got too many thoughts in it for worship these days. Did I mention this is Wretched Radio? All right, Tony, you now have a very serious responsibility in front of you. Which church story would you like to hear? Are you ready? You've got two. They're both of these are very long lists, so choose wisely, Grasshopper. 24 questions to ask before you join a local church. There you go.
Good one.
That one right there. Or these are statements that were written to help you identify that you are in a prosperity church. Which one of these lists would you prefer? Prosperity Church checklist or questions you should ask before you join a church.
Questions right, for joining.
We'll just get back to this then. What questions for joining?
Yep.
That would be a list from Josh Bice. By the way, Josh Bice, he heads up the G3 conference. I think the early bird is still on, so if you are thinking about going next year, get a deal. Sign up now. 24 questions to ask before you join a local church. We'll go through these. I think we're building a new page, not a whole new site. We're building a new page that hopefully will be a resource for you that you can send people to. We're going to have a lot of things there for people to watch, all gospel, all about how to, this is the true gospel. This is sermons about how to know you're saved or not saved, true and false. We're going to put raise two sermons, Hell's Best Kept Secret and True and False Conversion, two magnificent sermons that are so helpful. So many people have been saved from those. And maybe we'll put these questions up there, too. I think I created a list of 25 questions. So my list is better than Josh's because it's one
well,
more.
It's longer. Yeah.
Here we go. Is the doctrinal statement of the church clear and precise? If the statement of faith is unclear, could this reveal an intentional ambiguity by the leadership? I read something so smart, and I saw a church that does this. I think the people that graduate from Master's Seminary, tms.edu, do this. Rather than on their statement of faith page, it doesn't say, this is what we believe. It says, this is what we teach. Radical difference, because you can believe it without teaching it, but hopefully you can't teach it without believing it. So it encompasses both, because how many times have you gone to a church, you look up their faith statement, looks pretty good, and then what comes flying out of the pulpit makes you scratch your head and wonder, does that guy even know the basics of the faith? This is what we teach. Number two, what is the main preaching philosophy of the leadership? Expository or topical? Nothing wrong with a topical here or there, but as a diet, is it expository? Three, does the church practice church discipline? If it doesn't, it's not a church. Are there any instances of church discipline on record in the last 10 years? I think that's pretty reasonable. Number four, is it too easy to join and too easy to leave this local church? Is there a membership class? I hate to give credit here. It was Amy Semple McPherson. You know how it is. I'm watching some video, and on the side, it's like, well, that looks like it could be interesting. It was about Amy Semple McPherson, and she was a wildly popular preacher in the early 20th century, Los Angeles, and she had a huge following. What years was it, 20s or 30s with Amy, at any rate? And then she had the scandal of being kidnapped, and it was a complete mess. At any rate, I thought this was fascinating. Nevertheless, this isn't an endorsement of Amy. This is just, she died in 44, so she was probably big in the 30s, give or take, somewhere in that neighborhood. Okay. So the woman that was being interviewed, I think it was maybe her daughter or granddaughter, said, you didn't just join this church. You immediately had to start serving. Immediately. Where do you want to serve? Here, there. And you went to work. I think that's not a terrible thing to consider in some way, shape, or form, because church membership shouldn't be about, okay, this is the place where I'm going to shop for now, where I'm going to consume for now. No, this is where I'm going to join and labor with these people. A church should have a higher standard of joining, and it should be, remember, it should be harder to get in the front door than get kicked out the back door. The music ministry, is it a tool for worship and discipleship, or is it geared toward an entertainment approach? Makes a big difference. And I do have to say this, be careful to the more conservative church I'm trying to parse this really carefully here. Anytime you put person or people in the spotlight, it has an air of entertainment. No matter how high and lofty, you just got to be so careful. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying be really, really, really thoughtful about it. What's the church government structure? Is it led by a CEO pastor or a plurality of elders? Seven, is the preaching of the church aimed at the heart and the head? Do you engage the mind in worship? Because if you don't, your heart's not going to follow. What about missions? How does the pastor address unbelievers in the weekly sermon? Is it all about the unbeliever, or is he mindful of them? Does he find that balance? Does the church have a ministry to children and youth? Who leads those areas? Oh, let me see if I can find this for you. Received an email. Oh, this is just painful. He said he was at a church, I believe visiting, and he went to the youth group to see what was going on. Got it right here. I came downstairs to the middle school preacher running a game show on stage for football lore. I seriously didn't know if it was a game show or a church. If you get the questions wrong in the game, you get melted cheese and food dumped on you. That's the way to treat the kids in a dignified way. Then the preacher ate some of the food. No, hold on. This is not done. Yeah, that's like Nickelodeon.
You can't do that on television. Slime.
Hold on. The preacher ate some of the food off of the kids.
Well,
this is disturbing. I kid you not. There's something inside of me that goes, child abuse. Somebody call the authorities. Stop it now. This is twisted. And this is going on all over the place. Adults were participating. Terrific. This guy, Adam, writes, filthy, undignified, stupefying. Indeed. The sermon was called Armchair Quarterbacks. Who's running your youth group? What's going on down there? You should know before you join. Number 11 is what we're up to. Is the church led by male leadership? Is it complementarian or egalitarian? How is that put on display in front of the church? If it doesn't manifest itself in any way, it's not really. What about baptism? Big deal. Is the church a single campus or multi-campus model? Does the pastor give a public invitation to respond at the end of his sermon? How is that done? Is there manipulation involved? Is there a culture of disciple-making? Does the church take up an offering? How is that done? Hey, we're really sorry to have to... No, it's a joyful act of worship for the saints. And if somebody is there and they're uncomfortable with that because they're not a believer, so be it. It is a part of the worship service. Is the church committed to laboring to love one another? What's the church's position on the issue of marriage? What about small group discipleship? Is there a Sunday evening service? Not that it's a law, but find out why or why not. That's more telling. Does the church have a covenant of some sort? What are you bound to? Anything? How do they observe the Lord's Supper? Is it an open, closed, or closed communion table? You should find those things out. What about prayers during the church service? Is there a pastoral prayer? Is there a prayer of repentance? And finally, number 24, which not nearly as good as my list of 25. What priority does Scripture have in the worship service? Is it central? What about the public reading of the Bible? Hey, look, I'm really sorry, man. We're going to read like three verses, and they're kind of long, so I'm really... Prepare to hear the Word of God. How does your church present the public reading of the Word? 24 questions you should ask before joining a church. And I do mean joining. If you are not a member of a local church, you need to find the best one you can and join it. You say there aren't any good ones. I don't doubt you for a second. You got to find the least crummy one and join it. Or maybe it's time to start a church in your town. That is not out of the question. How do we think these things happen? This is Wretched Radio. Tempted, but I'm not going to do it.
Some churches in the rural areas in Zimbabwe, you get to a church with about 200 members. You only find one person with one Bible.
So tempted to say, you know, for just the cost of a cup of coffee. But I'm not going to do that, but... We could change that statistic. There are churches all over the globe. 200 people attending a church with one Bible. $5 will purchase a new Bible for a believer. Bible League International, historically proficient, sound, reliable. Let's get some Bibles into the hands of believers so they don't have to be sharing paragraphs until the next service. Please support Bible League International, wretched.org/Bible.
We are proud to announce our newest addition to the Drive-By series, Drive-By False Teaching. And just as the name implies, Drive-By False Teaching will give you the tools you need to distinguish the true from the almost true and contend earnestly for the faith.
Over and over again, these same heresies keep cropping up. And you'll notice that virtually every kind of false teaching you can name stems from one of these five errors that we're going to look at. Actually, these same heresies, they're not extinct. They may be ancient, but they are not extinct. And these deal with real life issues that touch you and me, and often try to infuse themselves even into the life of our church. We need to be familiar with them, and we need to know how to refute them.
The gospel of Jesus Christ is glorious and well worth defending. Drive-By False Teaching will help you defend our doctrines. Get your copy today at wretched.org/false teaching. That's wretched.org/false teaching.
When you sponsor a Tomorrow Club for $30 per month in Eastern Europe, you are writing stories like this.
Vova and Maxim, one is 11 and another 13, they're brothers. Both of them smoke like crazy, so when they joined Tomorrow Club, they would just make noise and kick other kids around. That winter, the father left the whole family without wood for the furnace, so they could freeze to death, and without food. So the leaders came and actually brought the wood to the family and fixed the things that they were broken in the home. So the boys saw what happened. They got saved, and the change in their attitude and behavior is just immense.
$30 per month, you'll be discipling 30 Eastern European kids in far-flung and very poor villages in Eastern Europe, and so much more. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is exhortation, the spiritual ability to encourage, comfort, and admonish God's people. Whether God's people are oppressed, confused, or in error, God has provided the gift of exhortation to comfort, urge, and correct them. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Prepare for an extremely complex beep talk.
1-7-7-2-8-2-BEEP.
This is Wretched Radio. That's the number of the old toll-free. Question, comment, conundrum, or snark. 1-877-282-BEEP. This is going to be a complex question. You haven't heard it yet.
It's beep talk. How complex can it be?
Oh, let me tell you something. It can be this complex.
Do Christians have to get married, or can they actually elope? Do you actually have to go through a covenant or through, like, a bill to actually get married? It's like Adam and Eve, right? Like, Adam was given a partner, right? Not in marriage, but then after, let's say, Adam and Eve, like, who married everyone else after that? So do we need to actually go through a church to get married, or can we just confess to the Father that, hey, she's going to be mine forever? We're not going to leave each other until death do us part. Is that good enough?
Told ya. Now, you're thinking that's complex because there were a number of questions and scenarios in there. And by the way, there are about a million more. I say that's a complex question because of what marriage is and what marriage isn't. Let me ask you a question. Tell me the history of marriage. Go. Go.
The history of marriage? You mean where
the history of marriage. Around the globe.
God said that wasn't good.
Right. Exactly. I agree with you. We see the first marriage right there in the garden. But then, now tell me about the ceremonies. How did people get married in 2000 BC? How did they get married in 1000 BC? How did the pagans get married? How did the Jews get? Well, we've got a little information on how the Jews got married to a degree. But we have no idea how people in Sweden got married 1,000 years ago or whatever number of years ago. Tell me the history of marriage, and I'm telling you something. You got yourself a book that would sell like hotcakes because it's very, very difficult. Now, That is why that question is complex, and that is why that question has some very real-world implications. Received an email, going to leave names out of this, sent to id@wretchedradio.com. It is a fellow who has been living with a woman for a number of years, got saved. The state that he lives in has determined that he is in a common law marriage. For him to separate at this point, he would actually have to get a divorce because it is a common law marriage because of the number of years that they've been living together. And yet, no ceremony. You're the pastor. He walks into your office. What do you advise? Now, you can walk away because you're not married. Well, the government says that you're in a marriage, but you didn't take a vow. Now, that takes us back to the garden. Sir, to the fellow who called, this is an outstanding question because of its complexity. And it might be a little bit unsatisfying, the answer, because I'm not sure that we're going to have something that's really tidy here. Nevertheless, when we do go back to the garden, it was a ceremony. Sir, that would be the one thing where I would say, no, that actually was a ceremony. Why? Well, it's because of the covenant language that was given. When they were brought together, Adam, the first words that were spoken, it's Genesis 2. Sorry about that. Genesis chapter 2. He spoke a covenant vow. And so he made a companion suitable. Adam exclaimed, "She is a part of my own flesh and bone, flesh of my flesh." We hear marriage language in this. "She will be called woman because she was taken out of man." She is that this was a lifelong covenant that he was cutting. It's the same language that was used with God's relationship with Israel, that he is faithful to his covenant promises, that it was a till death do us part sort of covenant. So it was a wedding ceremony. Now, fast forward to the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Paul is asked a question that he's answering in this letter. I think that was what was happening. He was trying to say, look, I understand this is an issue, so here's the information you need to know about marriage. Two people are married who are pagans. One of them gets saved, and the question is, are they married? Can they get divorced? And Paul's answer is, you can't get divorced. Now, what does that tell us? I grant you, this is not a clear treatise on it, but I think it's pretty clear that they were actually married in the eyes of God as pagans. What was the ceremony? I don't know. But it's clear God recognized it as being in a covenant relationship. How did that marriage happen? Don't know. Now, that brings us to today and this fellow's question. He's in a common law marriage because they've been married so long, according to the government, but he didn't do any sort of vow ceremony. Is he married? Who says who's married? Now, obviously, God does. And obviously, if government says you're married when they do not meet the biblical qualifications, it's no marriage at all. But if we're talking about one man, one woman, they're both unbelievers. Are they actually married? Can he just separate? Does he have to get a divorce? But the Bible doesn't allow for a divorce. So now they're going to stay together and they're actually married even though they never cut a covenant with God. It seems to me we've got ourselves a very complex issue here. And so that is why I think this fellow's question is very, very complicated because we simply don't know the history of marriage. So here's my question to you. What would you advise this fellow? What would you advise him? You're the pastor. Once again, welcome to the role of the pastor. Tony, Joey. The fellow walks into your office. I'm in a common law marriage according to the state. She's not a Christian. I am. What am I supposed to do? Walk away. Stay married. Your advice. Those are the two options. Tony, what say you?
Stay married.
All righty. They didn't cut a covenant like they did in Genesis chapter 2.
They're married.
Because the government said so. So government can actually determine if somebody's married
or not. Or is he just looking for an out?
Now, we don't even know. He didn't express any motives. It's just a straightforward theological question, rubber meeting the road. Are they, so you believe they're married, they should stay married. Mm-hmm. All right, Joey, are they married?
Yes.
Because?
Because the government saying that they are married.
All right, so you would say then, the government, so it is by the power invested in me, the government pronounces them man and wife. Not God in this instance. God recognizes what the state has done.
Recognizes it is not that the state makes it legitimate because mm-hmm. When two unbelievers get married by the power of the state, they're still married.
All right.
So the state has stepped in and said, this qualifies as marriage. You are living as people who are married, so we are recognizing your relationship, which is in all but name marriage. Now it is also in name marriage.
All right. So they don't have to have any sort of ceremony. It's a done deal.
Well, then you get into the issue of, so, because if it was two people who had a common law marriage, realized the sinfulness of it or whatever, and said...
Well, they can't overturn what the state has pronounced. If the state has pronounced
if they both got saved, then I would definitely quickly say, you know what? I will gladly perform your wedding in whatever...
But they're already married.
Yeah, but I will perform a covenant, a Christian covenantal marriage with you right here, right now.
Marriage can be determined by the state, but a covenant ceremony before God should be done in some sort of church setting.
Probably, yeah.
All right, so going back then to the question that the fellow asked in the beep talk, should Christians elope or can Christians elope? Well, I think the answer to that is, well, sure you can. Yeah, I mean, you can. I don't know why you would. I don't know why you'd want to do that. I see, part of the covenant ceremony is a public profession. And all of those people then can remind me, when I said I do, I didn't mean maybe. I meant I will. Till death do me part, not until it's inconvenient. And so it's a public profession also of the gospel. So I don't know why you'd want to do that. Do you have to do a covenant-cutting ceremony? I think the pattern for the Christian is, I would say that it leads that way. This is sort of like burial and cremation. I think we've got the pattern of burial, not cremation. I think it shows a hope in the resurrection that bodies aren't to be burned because they are indeed of some value because God made them. But I wouldn't say we've got ourselves a clear cut. You've got to absolutely positively... But I think the leaning is that a Christian should be willing to make a public profession, cut a covenant before God, because in my opinion, frankly, that is far more important than what the government says. From a Christian standpoint, honestly, I think the only reason to be let the government be involved is for tax purposes or any advantages that we should take advantage of if we choose to. Other than that, for the Christian, I would say make it as public as possible, a public covenant-cutting ceremony till death do you part, and then get your license if you need to. And as far as the fellow who's been deemed married by the government, based on 1 Corinthians 7, my leaning would be, congratulations, you're married. That's my leaning. As always with these complex subjects, consult your local pastor, which is why we need to be praying for those fellas. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.